Well, here we are again. It is May 27, 2026. Time for your weekly dose of common sense. I promise you're going to be chock full of common sense today. Norm's got his notes over there. I can see it happening. As always, brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. My accountant could be yours. You know, just the other day, I say this every week, but it's so true. I have these calls with Glenn Harper, the proprietor over there on the way in. And, you know, sometimes we just talk about the best way to barbecue. Sometimes we talk about business, but we were talking about business and the best way to set up my payroll and making some tweaks here, some tweaks there. And here's the interesting part. I talked to a colleague recently who did not have Harper Plus Accounting. And my colleague was asking me, hey, how'd you get? And I said, well, I just talked to my accountant.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't apparently talk to his accountant. So if
you're— Big mistake.
It's a big mistake. And I found there are different ilks of accounting, and none of wrong.
Right.
But there are folks who just, you give them the information, they give you the transactional return, that's that. And then there are folks, you give them the information and they say, you know, you might want to tweak that here a little bit, save you a couple $100 here, or maybe a couple thousand there, or there's a better way to do this and plan for the long term. So
I agree. You know, getting your tax advice from the TV or social media is a super bad idea.
Yeah, bad idea.
You know, like one example, if you talk to a real accountant like Glenn, they'll tell you that, you know, this popular notion right now that there's no tax on Social Security, for example, is just not true. It depends where you are in your overall bracket.
Yeah.
You know, your overall income. And it's not a one answer applies to all proposition. And people who try to do their own tax returns anymore can really mess themselves up.
Well,
you need advice even for a simple return.
That's right. And you know, the worst case scenario is you screw something up and you end up owing a crap ton of money.
Yeah.
But another—
And they charge interest.
Yeah. And a short and a close second to the worst case scenario is you missed a deduction that would have saved you a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Which
would either way.
My situation this year, there was a bunch of new tax advantages for small businesses that came in with the one big beautiful bill. And you know, you get to the end of the year, you can tweak, you can add a little bit more to your retirement account, and then you end up saving $30,000 on the— anyway, there's lots
you got to— you got to have a pro who knows all that.
Yeah. And you have to keep in touch throughout the year. So anyway, Harper Plus Accounting, we earned our sponsorship on. Anyway, look, fact of the day, this is what I typically do is I just Google what happened on this day in history, and something usually jumps out. And today jumps out a blast from my childhood past. I remember as a kid, you're old enough to remember these games. There used to be these games, and I think they maybe still exist. They had little grids on them. There were these war games, and they had grids and pieces and everything else.
Like Battleship.
Well, not the Battleship, but like these board games. And I remember my dad loved them. He was a history buff, and one was called Stalingrad. Another was called Sink the Bismarck. And that's what happened on this day in history in 1941. The Brits finally caught up with the Bismarck and put and sank it to the bottom, I think, the English Channel, right? Or the North Atlantic.
Yeah. So, after quite a chase.
And the Bismarck was, I mean, this giant, enormous German battleship that was like the Titanic, right? Unsinkable. And it was really difficult to sink. So they chase it around. And I remember as a kid,
on its maiden voyage, it was sunk.
Yeah. It's,
it went out to sea for the first time. It sank the HMS Hood and a couple of small cruisers. Something tells me maybe the Exeter, but I probably have that wrong. But it sank the HMS Hood, which was this— it would be like sinking the USS Enterprise now. It was one of those older battleships in the British Navy that was beloved by the entire, you know, British population. It was part of their heritage and culture.
And wasn't Churchill on the Hood? I think I might be wrong about that.
Well, he was at one point, you know, Churchill was commodore, or not commodore, but he was Secretary of the Navy in England during World War One. In fact, But anyway, the Bismarck took out the Hood in a couple of small ships, as I recall. And then I think the Prince of Wales and in an aircraft carrier, it launched some of those biplanes, and one of the torpedoes, just a freak thing, They missed. Every torpedo missed, if you could believe that, the big old battleship, right? All the torpedoes missed except one, and it hit the rudder of the Bismarck. And the Bismarck, from there on, all it could do was sail in a circle because the rudder was jammed and there was no way to fix it out at sea.
Out at sea, right.
So the captain of the Bismarck just, he's going in circles, and it was literally a death spiral. The British closed in and they just pummeled it until it sank.
And it took a bunch of abuse before it sank.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was not easy to sink the Bismarck, but
no,
they did it.
They rescued some of the crew, and there's a tremendous book by one of the German officers who survived about that battle, and highly recommend it.
Anyway, you heard it here, not first.
Yeah.
You did hear it here.
Now, in the Revolutionary War.
Oh, yes.
Some news.
Because we were 250 years in.
250 years ago. Before he was a traitor and tried to give up West Point, New York, Benjamin Arnold was
Benedict
Arnold was one of George Washington's favorite generals.
Quite capable guy.
Really a very brave, personally, very courageous. He negotiated coming off the screw up in Canada, where the Americans were chased away from Quebec. He negotiated a prisoner exchange. He chased down a British unit that had almost 500 American POWs, and because it was a combined British Indian American Indian or North American Indian army. The Indians wanted to put all 500 POWs to death, and he negotiated a release. Give us the 500 American prisoners, and at a time later, we will release 500, I think 487 was the actual number, but we'll release almost 500, an exact number of British prisoners at a future time and place. You have my word on it, and unlike negotiating with Iran, back then, the British and the Americans kept their treaty obligations with each other.
Yeah, old Benedict, the number one thing, I talk about C.S. Lewis all the time, but he wrote a book called Mere Christianity, and in there is a chapter called Pride, and, you know, it's like the worst of all sins, according to him, and old Benedict had suffered from a little bit of...
Oh, he did.
He thought other people were getting credit for his accomplishments. He felt like he was getting passed over, like he was better, you know, whatever. So and anybody who's been in this, you feel a little slighted.
Right.
Your ego gets in the way and you start to do dumb things. And among the dumb things he allegedly did was, I think he started to appropriate some of the money for his own lavish lifestyles, where he was taking over houses, furnishing them. I think he had a little concubine with him.
And,
anyway, it didn't go well. He eventually was caught turning over West Point to the Brits.
Yeah.
And it really pissed off George Washington.
Oh, yeah.
He took that very personally.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoot to kill orders. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
So anyway.
Not good.
That's your history lesson. More than you wanted, probably, but you got it anyway.
I think the biggest news overnight, unless something happened in the last 10 minutes, has to be the defeat of John Cornyn in the runoff down in Texas for U.S. Senator. And, as we've discussed on the show many times, there are all kinds of pieces of legislation, whether you are talking about funding for ICE, funding for the TSA, funding for the Secret Service, the Save America Act. We could go on and on all day about the legislation that's bottled up in the Senate, where John Thune just does not, even though the Republicans hold a majority there, there seems to be enough rhinoism going on that Trump just cannot get several pieces of key legislation, including, I mean, things like funding the Coast Guard, for God's sake.
Yeah,
and Cornyn was offered by Ken Paxton. We talked about this last week. Paxton said, I'll drop out of the race. You get the Save America Act through, you and Thune, and I'll drop out.
Yep.
He didn't do it. Paxton won the runoff election.
And he was the AG, right?
He was the AG. Yeah. And he's been on the right side of all kinds of Supreme Court decisions as part of the AG group on whether it's Second Amendment or tax issues or, you know, the gerrymandering case, which the Supreme Court just decided. Paxton has been, you know, he's been MAGA all the way. And Trump made an endorsement about a week ago. And he handily defeated Cornyn last night. So I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of, you know, with Bill Cassidy and Tom Tillis leaving and Susan Collins up to her, and Lisa Murkowski, both of them up to their usual soft, you know, positions. Now John Cornyn is probably going to be a little churlish and probably... I don't think Trump's going to get anything done in the Senate the rest of the year.
It would sound like that's not the case. And
when the new Senate comes in, assuming the Republicans retain control in the midterms,
And speaking of the rhinos, I don't know for sure the rhinos, but did you follow what was going on in South Carolina?
No.
So the South Carolina Senate rejects Trump's push to redraw. They're doing another redraw or redistricting map. I think four state Republicans voted against it.
Okay.
And that would have, had that have passed, that would have sort of changed the landscape, maybe even eliminated a Democrat seat.
Okay.
Now, I don't know why. I don't know enough news to know why they voted against it. There might have been good reason.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Sometimes you sort of got to take a step back. Even though you've got the power, maybe it's not the best to use it.
Right.
We don't like it when the other side redistricts completely. So when I first saw this
and
I read the headline that it would have eliminated all the Democrat seats.
That may not
be a fair representation.
Right. Say. Yeah. You know, neither side should unfairly do that to the other side. I think, you know, let's say in South Carolina, 40% of the voters are Democrats. Then some way or another, they're, you know, basic fairness would dictate that some way or another, they're entitled to some portion of that 40%.
Yeah.
You know, they need to be represented. They ought to be. And I think there's a lot of evidence that when one party has total control for an extended period of time, corruption happens.
Yeah, that's right.
Whether it's Republican or Democrat.
This is why we have a balance of power.
Yeah. Yeah. I think debate is good. I think fleshing out arguments is good. And I think having opposition and competition improves the product. So I'm like you. I don't know. I'm sort of guessing, but I'm thinking that they probably decided to be a little prudent, let the Dems have some of their districts, particularly in a racially tensioned kind of situation. They saw what happened in Memphis when the Republicans took away that safe Democratic district in Memphis, even though it was represented by a white congressman. When they redrew the map in Tennessee, it caused a lot of street, retail protesting. And I don't know how violent it got, but it was pretty massive response. And they probably said, hey, we don't need that here. You know, let's go easy. You know, as long as we have the majority of them.
Yeah, let's keep things status quo. Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
There could be some good reason for it. Anyway.
Have you been keeping up with the J.D. Vance fraud special task force?
I not as much as I probably should.
I mean, it's been really interesting. They held an AG meeting yesterday in D.C. with J.D. Vance presiding. And they had equal, half the AGs. None of the Democrats came. None of the Democrat AGs came, and not all the Republican ones came. So I think they had about 25. They had about 3 days' notice. So some people are saying it wasn't enough notice. But at any rate, they could have sent somebody, the assistant AG, whatever. But what is amazing about that is that in just 50 days since the creation of that task force, there's been 450 DOJ cases. Actions, in either prosecutions, charges, grand juries impaneled. They are moving fast, and we're not talking about millions, but billions. Hundreds of billions.
I have been defending criminal cases here in Ohio for my entire career, 31 years. I'm on my 31st year.
Yeah.
And lots of cases I've defended involve some sort of healthcare fraud.
Wow.
A lot of home health type stuff or whatever. Yeah. And I joked at a colleague of mine who went over to work for the Attorney General's office prosecuting these kind of cases. I just said, the government will find as much fraud as it wants to find. And it's sort of a slippery comment, but the basis of the comment is to say there is, the system is completely wrought with fraud.
Yeah.
And the mechanisms to enforce fraud is a government mechanism in and of itself. So it's like you could pile as many government employees into the fraud unit to go find as much fraud as you want to find, and both will exist forever. Because it just in both cost us a ton of money.
Yeah.
So we have I don't know how many lawyers in the Ohio looking for that kind of stuff, how many agents looking for that kind of stuff, and then how much money still goes out anyway.
Right.
And maybe, just maybe, the system isn't working. Right. Maybe there's better tweaks. And maybe not. It might be just that it's like the perfect employment is like what, 2% unemployment. So it might be that it just can't be perfect.
But it's kind of like shoplifting at Home Depot or Meijer or Macy's or something, where there's a certain amount of, what do they call it, leakage or whatever.
Like
there's just a certain amount that's going to happen and you account for it. I think culturally, and you've talked about this before, Steve, and I think you may have mentioned your dad at one point had a pretty good quote about this, but our system really only works if you want it to. And I think that goes back to we kind of talked about it with Benedict Arnold. Western culture always depended in part on high trust kind of society that we've always had. After all, you fill out your own tax return. You tell the government what you owe the government. And that first go round is based on the government having some measure, because it could have all kinds of, draconian tracking mechanisms that would just suppress us. But rather than doing that, rather than knowing, this company reports every nickel they pay you, Steve, to, represent them, instead, you tell the government how much you make and what your expenses are. And same way with these Medicare. So Stephen Miller at J.D. Vance yesterday was saying, like our SNAP program or Medicare or Medicaid, you would just, as an applicant, say, I have four kids. We don't have enough money for food. We don't have enough money for rent. And then the government doesn't do some four-month investigation of you. They cut they believe you. Mm-hmm. They give you that first
benefit of the doubt
because we're a high trust society. And when you bring in, and this sounds it sounds xenophobic, but bear with me. But when you bring in foreigners whose countries didn't have that ethic, where everything was might makes right, and where you have to actually, the way you survive is to scam.
Yeah, it's a hustle. Everything's a hustle.
Everything's a hustle.
By necessity.
So if you come in from Somalia, forgive me, Somalians who are honest and good and hardworking people. Forgive me, I'm not smearing all of you. But when you bring in a mass number of, say, Somalians, and they're desperately poor, and they find out that our high trust system allows them to just allege that I have this need, and then they get a check, you can almost see it's a perfect setup for fraud.
Well, you remember the movie? It was Russell Crowe is the boxer.
Oh yeah, right. I do. I don't remember the name of it.
But I'm drawing a blank because it's too early in the morning.
Where he came back? It was a comeback.
Yeah, Braddock is the boxer's name. But I don't know if it's actually true. I think it is true. I think I researched it one time.
Yeah.
There's a scene in the movie. There's two scenes in the movie. The first is when he is so far down in the dumps. He is so far beaten down psychologically, physically, not just boxing, that he has to go apply for welfare. He's got to get his check. He's got to get the dole.
Yeah.
And then there's a scene later on in the movie. So So he has to take his money, and it's shameful for him. It's a shameful experience. There's a scene later on where he goes and gives it back. And, you know, he's made it big. He's where he's come back from the bottom, and he goes and gives it back, which is sort of, I think, the intent of welfare initially. That was sort of the intent.
Right.
And
it was a hand up. It was how you, otherwise, like, you would have too much pride to just take it.
And it should, it that's how it still, quote, should be.
Be.
But it's not. No. And what happens with all those types of programs, human nature tends to take over.
Yeah.
And the more they give, the more you want, and the more you think you want, but you become dependent on it instead. And I know my mentor used to say, you go work for the government, you start taking the opium. Because then it's like, and versus what I do for a living, which is go hustle out there and try to get cases and work. And I'm not saying one's better than the other, but you got to be careful, because it's easy to become complacent when you're not hungry.
Yeah.
And if you just keep, if the government keeps you just not hungry enough, they will keep you on that dole forever, and you can become complacent, and the other side of human nature takes over. Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's remarkable what humans are capable of doing when we have to. And I also think it's remarkable how little we do when we don't have to. It just is.
Yeah.
It is. And we get what we pay for, so to speak. In other words, if the government's paying for you to do nothing, you will do nothing.
Yeah.
At least lots of people will. And it's not to say anything other than something about human nature.
Yeah.
I don't mean it to be insulting.
Yeah. No, yeah, I follow you.
Culturally, if you bring in people who don't have that American spirit, what we were founded on, and I think now we ourselves don't have it like we used to.
I agree.
Exactly, and they will take and take and take. I've been to places in the hollers where I hunt, and that the economy down there is all just government money.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading something incredible that we're getting to the point in the UK, in the United States, in France, and in major Western countries we're at the tipping point where either 50% or even just a tick less than 50% of able-bodied men are motivated to work.
Yeah.
Like, they're not working. They're just not working because the social safety net is enough for some people with a little bit of, you know, the black market economy, where they can go dabble as,
they fix somebody's car, they do somebody's and that's how it is. And where I hunt, it's like, there's stuff going on. Oh, you need a new gravel in your driveway. Yeah. They just show up and do it.
The cash price is.
Or maybe instead of cash, they fix your car because you did their drive. You did this and this. And, you know, it is the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah. And
there is always an unintended, as Thomas Sowell said, the outcome of a certain thing is hardly ever attributable to one cause, but there's a lot going on here. And if we decide as a government that we're going to just bring everybody out of poverty, like Johnson did in the Great Society, guess what? It didn't work.
Look how that turned
out. You got
out.
More poverty.
Yeah. Jeez. What could possibly go wrong?
What could go wrong? So if you get what you pay for. Anyway. And the fraud is that. And like you said, back to your point, you know, you bring in people who don't have that ethic. They don't look at this necessarily as bad. This is just free money.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we do it?
Right.
And you could say they're operating in the gray area. Well, look, it doesn't say I'm not allowed to take care of my own mom, so I'm just going to go do that. And that's free money.
Yeah.
And then look at COVID. Same kind of crap happened. I knew people taking those loans and taking the money and doing all this stuff.
Famous people.
They were printing money in their businesses. Yeah. All they had to do was say that they were impacted somehow by COVID, and they could get all this free money, and it's all later forgiven. And I get what the government was trying to do. Who'd have thought it might go wrong, right?
Yeah, And, now there's these task forces looking into the PPP and all of that. And it's like, well, you know, that's great. But, you know, a lot of people who perhaps would have applied for that didn't, because they thought it was going to be a loan they had to pay back. And they're like, well, I don't want to go deeper into debt, so I'm not going to apply for a PPP loan. And then they read 6 months later that Biden just said, we're going to forgive all that. And you're like, you mean I could have got $200,000 for nothing for free?
Yep.
You know, so my buddy over here got it, but I didn't get it. And it's just because.
And he didn't even need it.
He didn't even need, and it's just because I thought it was going to be real debt. And so as a good steward of my household and my running the business, why would I take on more debt? It's almost inexplicable. It's like Seinfeld, The Opposite Day or something.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, I was listening to another aspect of this. Cal Thomas, he's got to be 90 years old now, but he's like Pat Buchanan, one of the fathers of the conservative movement. And he was just mentioning, and I think this is worthwhile, that this the sacrifice on because all of this involves sacrifice, the high gas prices that really aren't any higher than they were under Biden, adjusted for inflation, that these gas prices are intolerable to a very impatient American population. And he points out that as the son of people who lived through the Great Depression in World War II, where rationing took place and inflation was off the hook, you could wallpaper your house with dollar bills, that went on for like 16 years. And Americans slogged their way through it and coped. And we just don't have you're right, Steve. I think we are sliding into a dependency culture, and we're probably there already, where people just, you see ads where people are told you're entitled to this benefit, and you're like, wow. You mean so that stair wheelchair thing so instead of walking up the stairs, if you apply to Medicaid for a medical device where they come in and put a $15,000 escalator in your house, well, it's all free and you're entitled to that.
Well, and it's
in the old days, grandma would have just struggled up those steps.
And think what you're buying. So if you subsidize or give people the means that they don't have to walk up the steps, they won't walk up the steps.
Yeah.
And
because they're entitled.
And again, I'll quote Thomas Sowell again. He goes, rarely are programs such as that judged on the outcome, only on the intent.
The intent.
So the intent of that is a good intent. If you've got old folks or handicapped folks who aren't able to get up the stairs on their own, then yeah, it sounds awesome. Let's give them this electric chair that goes up the stairs. I remember going to church and I got to ride it as a kid. It's great. It's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
But if you start giving that away, then what you're going to pay for are people not using the stairs. And is that a good thing in the long run? Is it good that your father doesn't go up and down the stairs? Well, yes, on the one hand, when it's too late for him to go up and down the stairs and you don't want him to fall down. But what if he starts not going up and down the stairs too early, and then that he starts to decline more. So,
or people who don't really need it.
That's what I mean. So instead, or maybe they need it or maybe they don't. So
or maybe they should be means tested, but it's like,
but that's not enough either. So
yeah.
Somebody close to my family at one point that was injured. And as a result of the injury, couldn't go up and down the stairs, but was young enough where, it's like not the way you wanted to live your life.
No, you should rehabilitate.
And I told this person, I said, and I get it. It was easy. These are one of these things that's easy to say. I'm not being arrogant about it, because right. I get it. It was a struggle for him.
Sure.
But I just said, look, why not just, like, you've got this little baby, like three stairs going into your house or whatever. Why not just go up and down those four times a day?
Right.
Or maybe once a day, if that's right. all you can do. And right. then tomorrow do twice.
Right.
And then three.
Right.
And then four. And then pretty soon you're going to be able to go up and down the stairs again.
Right.
And
physical therapy.
Or you could just give the guy a chair and then he'll never go up and down the stairs again.
Right.
And what else atrophies as a result of that? And by atrophy, it's not just physical, it's also mental. So when we start giving people money not to work, everything up here starts to atrophy.
It does.
I quote my dad all the time. He used to say, your mind is a muscle. If you don't use it, it gets weak.
Yeah.
And I find
so true.
When I sit there and doom scroll or look at stupid stuff on the internet all day, I feel bad. I actually feel physically sort of run down.
Yes.
Unmotivated.
Yes.
Rainy day gloom.
Yes.
Bad. Or
yes.
The day, sometimes we say, my wife will say, you need it. You need a day of rest on the couch. And I'm thinking, no, I don't.
Yeah.
I need to get out there and get the mower out and start doing something.
Something.
Because it really spirals out of control for me, and I have to be careful about it. I don't think I'm alone.
No, I think that's a good point. And, kind of switching gears here. About competition and improving the breed. Ohio's Meyer Shank Racing won its second Indy 500.
Ah, yeah, that's right. And barely got it in under the wire with the rain coming.
They are headquartered in Central Ohio. And, Ohio has a rich history of the Indy 500. You know, Bobby Rahal and Jim Truman having won it in, I think it was 1986. And then Meyer Shank Racing won it in 2021, and then again this year. And it's fantastic. Really good for Ohio. You know, after all, Eddie Rickenbacker of Ohio owned the Indianapolis 500 racetrack for a few years.
So how does this happen? You're a racer. People don't know this about Norm. Norm goes out and actually races cars behind the wheel.
Yep.
Driving full speed, winning sometimes even.
Yep. Yeah,
surprisingly. Surprisingly, Norm is a winner.
Won a championship last year with my Mustang.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. How is it that Ohio is a racing state? Because you would think, everybody thinks like North Carolina or down south or like the rum runners down, or the bootleggers down south is what it starts at. But why Ohio?
Yeah, I think it's probably that we are a very populous state. So, you know, first of all, there's just a lot of people here. So where there's a lot of people, there'll be a lot of racing. So just like California and New York, which really don't have a whole lot of racetracks anymore, but there's a lot of racers in those states because they're very populous. I think that's one part of it. But also, I found out actually from J.D. Vance during his campaign, he came out with a statistic, which I had never, or was it Bernie Marino, one of the two, that Ohio is the number one automotive parts manufacturing state in America. There's more stuff made here.
I knew that in the past. I wonder if that's still true.
Well, they said it was.
Like Dayton had a lot of stuff closed down.
Dayton did, but then you've got these centers like Marysville, Ohio, where Honda has set up all of these cottage businesses where they're independently owned, but it's kind of like the Kuretsu system in Japan, where the Japanese manufacturers, kind of hearkening back to Henry Ford, where their tentacles go out to these suppliers so they can get just-in-time inventory brought in to the factory assembly plant, you know, right, so they don't have to own the inventory, but it flows in as they are making a Honda Accord or a Honda Goldwing on the assembly line out there in Marysville. And this stuff comes in from their suppliers all over Ohio, upholstery, metal castings, you know, hardware, wiring, all the stuff. And then Honda puts it together in those four big assembly plants. So I think Honda's an example. I know Ford still manufactures a ton of stuff. There's the Toledo Jeep plant still roaring. You're right. Columbus and Dayton lost a lot of manufacturing, but it's kind of been replaced by Toyota, Nissan. They all have plants here in Ohio.
What's interesting is I grew up in a small little town in Ohio, you know, the farm community or whatever. And I'm not saying I was a poor farm guy. I mean, it wasn't, but it was in that community. And there were two things that everybody loved: muscle cars and football.
Yeah.
Right. It just seems like
that
was what people loved. Like everybody wanted the muscle. Now, of course, that might have been my era too. So in the 80s, you wanted like the 60s Mustang
for sure,
or the Chevelle or me, the GTO.
Right. Right. So
It just seemed that was sort of in our blood.
Yeah. The GTO was considered by most automotive experts as the first muscle car in 1964. And they point out, well, earlier Chrysler had the 300 or whatever, but muscle cars, you know, for Midwestern kids, Indiana kids, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky kids. And you saw it in the Blues Brothers. I mean, there's this thing in the Midwest where, we like big motors. We like horsepower. We like burning rubber.
Yeah, it's fun.
I race a Boss 302 Mustang, and I have smaller cars that make almost as much horsepower, but almost nobody walks up in the pits and wants to look at those things.
Yeah.
They want to look at the muscle car. Boss 302.
Yeah. And then,
and Grabber Blue, they just lose their minds over that. So, no, I get it, man. Little bit about Ohio, since we're on Ohio. I noticed, I didn't get a chance really to bounce this off of you, but I think you and I both have a lot of respect for Dave Yost. He is leaving or has left. I'm not sure his final day, but it's either happened or it's happening soon, where he is leaving as attorney general. And I wish he was running for governor, but anyway, He's resigning, leaving early, and he's going to go to the Alliance Defending Freedom, which I think is fantastic. I mean, if you are going to use your legal talent for public affairs work, man, that's one of the top places. I mean, that is, those guys defend people on free speech, being able to practice the religion of choice. It's really great stuff, and he'll be a fantastic litigator.
Yeah, Yost is, I've known Dave. I mean, he grew up in a neighborhood near my, in mine. So okay. I've known him for a long, long time, and I knew him when he was a practicing attorney up in Delaware County, and then he became a clerk of courts. I think he was an auditor first, then he became a clerk of courts, then he became the prosecutor, and then, you know, he sort of moved up. But I've not agreed with everything he's done
over the years,
positions he's taken. And then in one, I remember sort of a ad hoc debate I had with him on the phone when Ohio was changing our criminal discovery rules. But the one thing about him, he's a pretty he tries to do what he believes, I think. And you could disagree with what he believes in, but at least he tells you what he believes in and he tries to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that is a quality that we are lacking these days, where people act not on what they believe, but what they think people will approve of or what or later. Dave, I think, pretty much sticks to his lane on what he believes in.
Yeah.
And he comes out for things that are sometimes popular and against things that are sometimes popular. You know, it's like he tries to do what he believes in. And I think you're right. I think that's a good fit for him ultimately. Now, why? I don't know the politics behind why he didn't end up running for governor.
Man, it crushes me.
Maybe he thought I thought the Senate would have been a good place for him at some point. But anyway, this.
Well,
it could be that he just doesn't want to do it.
He may have just seen that, you know, Trump made that, in my opinion, terrible decision to endorse Ramaswamy way early. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Ramaswamy should not ultimately, I don't know the ins and outs of all their positions, but perhaps Ramaswamy, who we can get to here in a minute, but perhaps ultimately, he would have gotten Trump's endorsement, like Paxton got his with 1 week to go, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why Trump did it so early. I think it might have involved some politics with Elon Musk and Ramaswamy at the Doge, because Ramaswamy was part of Doge, and then he left, and he said, I'm running for governor, and bingo, he got the endorsement like that day.
Yeah. Or it might even go back further, because Ramaswamy is running for president too. At one point,
right.
So it could even go back further. I don't think he was a viable candidate ultimately.
But, what I will say about Dave Yost, so I find this kind of courage remarkable in a public servant. So John Kasich, Republican governor, and then Mike DeWine, fully employed this mechanism they created called Jobs Ohio, where Jobs Ohio is funded by the Ohio Department of Liquor Control. In effect, they created a public corporation, chartered by the state of Ohio, but not subject to auditing. So when Dave Yost was auditor, he took on Governor Kasich and took on later Governor DeWine, his fellow Republicans, very publicly before the Ohio Supreme Court. Again, the Supreme Court dominated by Republicans. And they turned him down on the idea that Jobs Ohio, getting its funding from a public source, the Department of Liquor Control, that it should be audited. It should be open to the public and transparent how it spends its money, how much money it gets, who it gives its money to, who gets the grants, data centers, Intel, meat processing plants, et cetera, Chinese windshield manufacturers, whoever, solar cell manufacturer, who's getting this money, how much, how many jobs did it really create in the final analysis? What are the contracts between these companies and Jobs Ohio? Well, Dave Yost wanted all that to be public, and he fought for it. And think of balls that took. I mean, he's part of the Republican administration, and he took on his fellow titans.
He will speak his mind one way or another. Right?
I mean, that's a credit to him.
He was also a really good politician.
Yes.
He was able to navigate that and still keep his credibility.
Even to advance beyond auditor and become AG.
Yeah. So, you know, like him or hate him, there's lots of, or both. And I just read this headline. Attorney General Dave Yost resigns to join National Anti-LGBTQ Plus
Group. Oh, what a way to put it.
Right, isn't that great?
Not pro-family, anti-LGBT. Right. So, does it give a date? Does it say when his last day is or was? It's right around now, I thought. Sometime in May, end of May?
I'm not seeing a job. Okay. So I could find, we need Troy, our
Yeah. We'll figure that out. But it's, he's resigning about a half a year before his term is up. It's basic.
And a guy named Andy Wilson is getting the nod. And he was a county prosecutor in Clark County, I believe.
Okay.
And then now he's getting the nod at Attorney General. So we'll see how that all plays out.
On Ramaswamy. So I don't want to lose this thread. There is a ton of political writing taking place about how he is losing rural Ohio because he, and rural Ohio is incandescently bright red. I mean, it is, you can't get any more MAGA than rural Ohio. I mean, it is just a solid block of easy Republican votes. And this is going to sound a little, perhaps, again, xenophobic, and it's not meant to be because, you know, Ramaswamy is he's as American as me and you. But he's a Hindu. He's brown like me. I don't think as a block, rural Ohioans are bigots or in any way xenophobic. But he has a little splaining to do. For a traditional Ohio Republican who's not of Christian origin, who's not, you know, doesn't have a Caucasian appearance, he's just got a little explaining to do about his story. And his story could be very easily explained that, you know, he believes in God and he's given speeches. He went to a Catholic high school. He was valedictorian at a Catholic Jesuit high school. He's on the board of St. Xavier High School, et cetera. So he has lots of friends in the Christian community. He can very easily explain that he is a theist and that, you know, I'm a fellow Ohioan born in Ohio, raised in Ohio, you know, made my billions here in Ohio, et cetera. So he has a good story, but he's screwing it up by not having some sort of policy on data centers. We have 225 data centers in Ohio, and they, if you look in the southern, like the Smile region of the Ohio River, the southern Ohio, and you look at central Ohio, and you can go to Aaron Brockovich's website and see the little dots where all these data centers are planned or have been already built. And it is a cluster. And you would think with people's very normal concerns about pollution, groundwater use, noise, night pollution, the lack of jobs, the Jobs Ohio, we're giving them money to bring them here. And of course, electrical rates just going through the roof. And talk about modular nukes, you know, eventually replacing their dependence on, you know, the
modular
grid.
Nuclear power. They're going to build their own in-house.
Yeah. And people will have concerns about that, and rightly so. You would think Vivek, being smart, knowing that he already has a story that he has to get out there about who he is and what his background is to bring in these rural votes, He's just gung-ho on data centers.
Here's a headline.
For God's sakes.
Rural Ohio fights back against Ramaswamy's plan to expand AI data centers. And this is on a website called tiffinohio.net. So that's up in, what, Seneca County?
Yeah.
Sort of northern middle Ohio.
Right.
You know, like that's a small town writing against this. So he's got to be careful.
Yeah.
He's got to be careful.
And he is in a statistical dead heat with this Amy Acton. And she's a catastrophe.
She is.
Yeah.
So look, there's got to be, I think you're the way you put it's probably the best. He needs to acknowledge the concern, come up with a coherent plan to say, look, we need, I don't know what I don't know enough about it, but it would be something like this. We need some data centers here, guys. We're going to figure out the best way to make this happen,
right?
Without destroying too much water or getting using too much. Like I'm with you. I get it.
Right.
I hear your concerns, but it seems to be falling on deaf ears. And if the alternative, you know, we've got this sort of schism right now in the party, and they may not vote, and that will by de facto give Amy Acton the job. And
that's right. If they sit on their hands and not vote.
Yeah.
So, and there is a...
So guys, hold your nose and vote either way, because one is going to be worse than the other.
Yeah. I mean, see, that's the thing. And that's what I told a lot of my friends when Trump was running against Hillary. It's like, well, what choice do I have? Yeah. What choice? What's the rational choice? What choice do I have?
Yeah.
You're giving me two flawed candidates. I've got to pick the least flawed one,
which was
Donald Trump.
As I say often, in my line of work, we often have to choose between crappy and crappier. I will always take crappy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I will always take, versus putting your head in the sand and doing nothing, right? Because you don't get the third choice. Here we have two choices. It's going to be Vivek or it's going to be Amy Acton. And if you think that you're going to sit on your hands and say, well, I didn't vote for either of them, so it's not my fault. Well, you still get the crap that comes from it.
I think the policy I would announce if I was a Republican running for governor, and if I was convinced by the Department of Defense and by big tech that data centers are just a fact of life and they got to happen, or we're going to lose our national security to China, or whatever the argument is. And I admit, I don't fully understand and I don't have a hard position. But I would say between the two extremes, letting willy-nilly construction of data centers anywhere they want to be, where you're just rezoning from agriculture to heavy manufacturing, like, you know, bada bing overnight. I think that's one extreme. And then at the other extreme, there's a movement. There's an issue that's trying to be qualified for the ballot to ban data centers altogether. And that's the other extreme.
Yeah, you can't do that. So somewhere in the middle.
And you know where I saw this on a sign, so I'm not the originator. No data centers near homes.
All right, well, that's not so bad.
I like that.
And I think the bigger problem here is that when the government gets involved, either subsidizing, encouraging, doing something, people, and maybe none of that's happening, but it feels like it is.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like what's going on out in Johnstown. You know, it's like it always feels like it's a little bit sneaky.
Yeah.
It's
well, when jobs Ohio.
Making money. Somebody's doing this and we don't really know.
And you can't audit
it. And we can't fight it. I know what's going on in Sunbury. And there's all sorts of this stuff that people feel like they are being duped. And they're being duped by the one entity that should never dupe you. And that's the government.
Yeah. Especially your local officials. It's like... Yeah. How can you NDA yourself away from the people you're going to have coffee with at the local diner?
Yeah.
Money.
It's money.
The opportunity to cash in early with your insider knowledge.
So what's going on in Iran, Norm? We're going to have do we have peace?
Well, for about 5 seconds there, I was heartened. What was it, Sunday?
Yeah.
When finally the Navy responded to these shore batteries and these mine-laying torpedo boats, you know, I'm like, Trump, please, for God's sakes. I think all these people who have said, and I think this is, I'm just more and more sure of it now, that I don't know what Trump thinks he's doing. This is not a real estate deal. You're not going to get the Iranian mullahs to sign a document that they're going to uphold.
No.
And if I was Iran, I would have signed some kind of document 6 weeks ago.
Right.
And then just not keep the promises.
That's right.
Just be like North Korea or be like the old Soviet Union and just disobey the terms of the treaty. And, you know, but do that after the Sixth Fleet or whatever is sitting over there in the Red Sea sails home so that Trump or some future president has to do this all over again. They're playing him. Right now. That's what it feels like. If it's like, dude, you've given this 6, 7, 8 weeks of a truce.
Yeah.
And it's not a real truce because they're shooting at us and they're shooting at our allies and we're shooting back. And it's like, dude, just do the deal. Just send the Marines in, take Karg Island, send in whatever you need to send in to extract or to destroy in place
now, I get
the nuclear dust. and then just call it a day.
I get the idea, right? Because every day they're going bankrupt and they're eventually going to implode. But right. He's up against a clock here.
He is.
And you got to be careful with that.
Like, yes.
And he says he doesn't care about the election. He should.
Yeah. And like Cal Thomas said, this ain't the old United States where you could put up with a depression for 16 years. The voters, well, they did. They turned Herbert Hoover out and they brought in FDR.
Yeah, who they think helped, but really just delayed the depression until the war.
So. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yes.
Anyways,
so I think we need to end this.
Do your business or get off the pot.
And getting off the pot is not an option because you're just kicking the can down the road. And this is what everybody gave Trump credit for. On the one hand, is that you're the first president in 47 years not to kick the can down the road. End it.
I like what he's doing. Look, he is. I do think that this was more of he's really taking on China.
Yeah.
And Iran's a place where he can do that. Right?
That's right.
But it's time to get it over the line.
There are 2,500 tankers bottled up there now.
Yeah, let's get it over the finish line.
Let's get it over the finish line.
You want to do some good and bad?
Yeah, one little fun news thing, because we talk about drones and technology and AI, but this is just a fun thing, not a winners, losers yet, but Steve, this is really cool. I can't wait till it comes out. I hope it's inexpensive because I'll be the first customer. They're talking about for us people, and you and I are both qualified for this, who live out in the sticks, that there is something being developed about to come out like in the next couple months, a mosquito iron dome.
Okay.
Where you're going to have a fleet of little mini drones that hunt down and kill the mosquitoes in your backyard.
It's going to be like it's like science fiction stuff. I already don't trust it. So right. I already don't trust
it's
it.
Spying
these are
on you.
Spying drones.
It's going to hurt your dog.
I am not. I do not want these things in my house. I will take care of the mosquitoes on my own. Thank you.
Citronella candles.
They are gathering information that will later be used against me. I get my foil hat out. You heard it here first.
Okay.
That's corruption. And there is an alternative motive for this. I trust it not.
Well, anyway, so my winners and losers. Should I do both winners, losers?
Yeah,
right. Okay. And then you do yours. My winner would be all of the, people who, again, it was just coincidental. It's about our military, not about NASCAR drivers. But coincidentally, on Memorial Day weekend, right before that, Kyle Busch, 41-year-old, the winningest driver in NASCAR history. I mean, more than Richard Petty, two-time champion, passed away of pneumonia, is what they think, and that turned into sepsis. And what I like about what people said in their comments before the Charlotte 600 is that they were remembering the driver between the lines. And this has always been my beef about Pete Rose. Please, when it comes to these athletes, like, they're not role models for my kids. Pete Rose would never be a role model for my two sons, and neither would Kyle Busch. So if what I liked is they focused on what he did between the lines, and I think that is the best way to remember his talent and his tenacity. And he pissed off the fans and made fun of his fellow drivers. But at the end of the day, was an incredible talent.
Yeah, that's interesting what you're bringing up. You know, it reminds me of people like Tiger Woods.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal right. between
right.
the lines.
Right.
Struggled in personal life. And then juxtapose Jack Nicklaus, who, had both, except they didn't like Jack when he was young.
Right? No, they didn't.
They didn't.
No.
Jack was like this, he was way too focused.
You're beating Arnold Palmer.
You're beating It's like, so you can't please everybody.
No.
You can't. On the other hand, we sort of look at our idols like in a vacuum, it's a tough one to unravel, but I'm with you. He was a great, I didn't follow racing, but I knew him and I did follow that. And
you'll love this. At one of the races where he won, and they're bumping each other coming down the final straight, and he bumped some guy and they thought it was unfair. And the fans were booing him when he got up on top of his cars, you know, and all that. Right. They're booing him. So they got the microphone in his puss, and he says, hey, if you don't like it, quit coming to the races.
Yeah, that's awesome. And
the fans went nuts, right?
And it's like, it's perfect. And it's great for racing that you have that.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, I every now and then I go down these rabbit holes and I watch all these old NBA players talk about Larry Bird.
Yeah.
Who talked the most crap out of any of them? Any of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they all loved him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he was a dick.
Yeah, he was.
But they loved him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's
Kareem,
like,
Dr. J. Right. Yeah. They couldn't deal with him, but they like, respected
who is
him.
This tall white guy coming in here like a lanky goon?
Yeah, right.
And he would tell him what he's going to do. And they laugh about it now, and they're good friends now. So there is something to this. Part of the sport is that Muhammad Ali was a trash talker, and he was hated and he was loved, and he was an icon because of it.
Right.
So look, give the guy a break. You know, some of that is show, but some of it makes him great. That was one of my sad, or that was going to be my sad thing. It's like that. What a horrific.
Yeah. Terrible with a wife and two young kids. I mean, it's just bad.
Yeah.
My losers. And this is, I mean, this is a wiffle ball, the DNC and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. The DNC on one hand, now this is on Memorial Day where you're supposed to remember the dead who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our country, right? It's not Veterans Day. It's Memorial Day.
No, it's George Floyd Day. No, I think that's where you're going.
That's where I'm going. Yeah, so Walz celebrates Memorial Day, which is about our military, our gallant military men and women who gave their lives. He celebrates it in George Floyd Square. And he dances with the people there doing some kind of, I don't know what it was.
What a weird dude.
And then the DNC, just to wrap it up, even Tammy Duckworth, who's the most liberal of all the DNC senators, lambasted the DNC's own ad on Memorial Day. They put up pictures of the 13 people who have been killed so far, U.S. service personnel, in the war with Iran.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, one was a refueling accident. I don't know what the others were, but they were basically non-combat, but they were on the job deaths. And they put their pictures up like it's partisan somehow that they died like for Donald Trump. And Tammy Duckworth, who's a veteran herself and an injured, a disabled veteran, good for Tammy Duckworth, who I agree with almost nothing. For saying I condemn that ad, that's a terrible, and they pulled the ad.
Yeah, they make politics out of these soldiers' deaths. I mean,
that's grotesque.
And look, you're right. Memorial Day, it was about the fallen on the battlefield or those who lost their lives for the country.
Yeah,
and it had nothing to do with George Floyd losing his life. And even if you look, and this is not to say that you can't feel bad about George Floyd's death, but it would be the functional equivalent on the other side would be like, let's put Charlie Kirk up. You know, that's more like I would have disagreed with that.
Of course.
Right. So there's lots of tragic deaths in the world that don't get celebrated on Memorial Day, but you remember them anyway. And it doesn't make them any less significant.
JFK, Abraham Lincoln.
Right, right. I mean, these are all great. Right. Great point. Yeah. Good examples.
You know,
and it doesn't mean like the idea is give the veterans, those who gave all, give them their day. Damn it. Don't hijack that too.
I mean, think of it.
It's such a slight.
And you don't have to think of it that hard. In your family and in mine, we have individuals that, you know, trotted on down to a recruiting office and put up their hand and took an oath to defend the country and put their lives on the line. That's serious stuff. Yep. That's very different than George Floyd being, quote, murdered. Or
look, there's lots of murder victims and all of it's tragic.
Yeah.
All of it.
Sure.
You don't put their pictures up during Memorial Day.
No.
And if you do, you don't do it in the sense that that's a, because here, I think what's really going on is this. What really offends me by it is that by putting his picture up, they're sort of rejecting the country's celebration of Memorial Day. And maybe that's not what their intent was, but that's how it feels.
Well, they're certainly minimizing.
That's how it feels.
Yeah.
And
that is how it feels.
But the opposite wouldn't be true. If you never talked about George Floyd on Memorial Day, but then you did every other day, nobody would think the opposite.
That's right.
Nobody would think, well, you're somehow downplaying George Floyd's death by not talking about a Memorial Day.
That's right.
It's a little bit of it's bad. So yeah, that was my bad too.
Okay.
Now my good, I was out at Fort Carson, speaking of Army and veterans and those who serve, I got to visit my son. He's out in Fort Carson.
And that's Colorado.
In Colorado Springs, Colorado. And what a, I'm almost reluctant to talk about it because it's a little diamond in the rough out there. It is awesome. He is, these young men are having, and young women are having, the time of their lives out there. They go hiking in the mountains on the weekends, and during the week they're working on whatever their jobs are, their MOS duties are. I got to spend the weekend with my son out there, and you know, I salute y'all. Awesome.
These guys
are having a blast. They're serving the country. They're doing their jobs.
Right.
And look, is it perfect? No. No. It's the government. It's the army. It's not perfect.
Right.
But it's pretty damn good out there.
Yeah. Let's not besmirch our military, an occasional steak dinner or a hike out in the woods in their off time.
I did buy him a nice steak dinner, by the way.
Yeah.
In Denver. So.
But yeah. I think the taxpayers, before they go into combat, that's a long tradition, you know, steak and eggs, you know.
Yep.
And there's people who are they consider that waste or something.
No. These guys, and it is important to note that I'm saying it's awesome out there for them, but they're not doing what we're doing.
They're not going home to sit on the couch. No.
And they're
subject to being called up at any damn time.
Right. They're working hard, and you know they're living away from home.
Yeah.
They make their home a barracks. Or at least my son has.
Yeah.
And his buddies. They've made their home a barracks.
Hey, Steve, at any time, they can call him up.
He can be called up.
If we do what I, you know, I don't want us to have to do it, but if we did take over, say, Karg Island.
We got boots probably on the ground for that.
And they could pick up the phone and say, hey, contingent from Fort Carson, you're on a C-130, you're heading east.
Yep. And they're giving up that freedom and they're gaining. I mean, I'm talking about what they get in return, but it's serious.
Deal.
It's a serious deal. So anyway, that's my good. And part of that's just, I got to see my son.
Yeah. That's awesome. Awesome.
All right. Look, this has been your weekly dose of common sense here at Common Sense Ohio. You can check us out at commonsenseohioshow.com. We love the comments. Leave your questions, leave your comments. We'll do our best to answer it right here, right from the middle. Till next week.